probably heard that the U.S. is one of the world's largest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions, but did you know agriculture is one of the largest contributors to those emissions? This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today, we're going to talk about regenerative farming, what it is and whether it can help reduce the climate pollution our country generates. Joining me now are University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor and Undergraduate Director for Environmental Studies, Terry Jacobs. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you. Welcome for having me.
Oh, we're very happy to have you. And Brandstrater Farm farmer and owner, John Brandstrater. Thanks for being here, John.
Thanks for inviting me down.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. John, start out by telling us, what is regenerative agriculture and how do you use it on your farm?
Well, for our farm, it was an evolution. I started out being, I guess, a degenerative farmer. My father liked to grow corn and nothing but corn with fall tillage, and so I grew up doing that. And thanks to the Warren County Soil and Water, would do this annual breakfast, conservation breakfast, and they'd invite speakers, and also some of the farmers in that were practicing cover cropping and regenerative agriculture way before it was ever called that. And I was a slow learner, but I kept listening. I respected these people, and I tried it out, and I went, wow, my soil is getting spongier, and my water is infiltrating, and I like it. So, and then the other thing is I don't love doing all the tractor hours tilling, so if I can go in and just do no-till planting, that frees up a lot of time, so I can go out and enjoy kayaking and other endeavors.
Yeah, have a life outside of your farming. Is it more expensive to farm that way, or do you find that even if there's some upfront costs, does it save money or result in making more money in the long run?
No, in fact, you need less equipment. You know, the farmers use less fuel. You're wearing out less things. You know, you have to wait on the soil to get right. And cover crops can help do that. They can pull moisture out of the soil so that you can get on it. And it also improves the composition of the soil so that you don't sink in a structure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Terry, how much of regenerative agriculture is kind of going back to the way many farmers operated generations ago? Is this a back to the future kind of thing going on?
I guess it sort of is going back to the future because it's traditional farming. We used to have, you know, the livestock on the land. They would rotate. The cow puts the free fertilizer down and it goes in, makes your soil carbon. Fertilizer holds water better. Farmers have, you know, a rich bounty. And the cycle continues. And we've broken that up with our conventional, or what we call industrial farming. And we realized through conventional farming, the plow, the tilling that John mentioned has released carbon because it increases microbial activity and it just releases the carbon and you don't hold as much soil. You lose soil acids, which is the humus or the organic matter. And the cover cropping, you keep it covered. You don't lose your soil. So that's one of the biggest things. We're losing our soil faster than it's replenished. And if we don't, we are not going to have any soil fertility. I'm sure everyone remembers the Dust Bowl. We don't want to go back to that future.
Yeah. John, you mentioned that your father farmed in this degenerative way. I love that term you used. Was this something, though, were some of these practices things that farmers, you know, before his day were using? That, I mean, do you see it as kind of a back to the future?
My father grew up working behind a plow. And that was a much more organic kind of agriculture. There was still erosion. And he after World War II, he went to a school, and it was all about modern agriculture. And so they told him to get rid of his livestock, tear out the fences, and plant nothing but corn with heavy tillage every year and use anhydrous ammonia. And he only needed one set of equipment, and it worked financially. And when I took over the farm, it was a nightmare of weeds, low yields, and I wanted to switch things out, but he didn't agree. So I left the farm for a while.
Okay. Well, we'll let that rest right there. Terry, let's talk a little bit more about how agriculture contributes to the climate crisis. I mentioned at the top of our conversation that it's a big contributor. In what ways?
A lot of ways. I'm going to try not to sound like this is a classroom.
Okay, that's okay.
So, firstly, we converted wetlands and forests into farmland. So we lost the held up carbon both in the soil and in the plant material that way. So if you want to look at, like, since the dawn of agriculture, we've probably released about, it's like 80, I got a note here because I never remember numbers.
Oh, that's okay. I was a journalism major, so I'm right there with you.
Now, if I can just read. Oh, 80, it's equivalent to 80 years of present day emissions.
Oh,
so that
goodness.
Came from a study. I didn't make that up. That's why I have to look it up, because if I made it up, I'd just come up with the number real quick. But so it's just conversion. And then with tilling, like I mentioned before, you're losing the carbon from the microbial activity. And then we leave the soil bare. There's no cover crop. There's nothing on it. When wind or rain comes through, it just washes it or blows it away, and it goes into the stream systems. And we've lost about 30 to 50% of our topsoil. And if you want to hear about, like, Katrina's worse, I can tell you why. But that's a different story.
Okay.
But it has to do with soil.
Okay. We're talking about regenerative agriculture and what kind of impact it could have on reducing climate pollution. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Terry, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I forgot about the fertilizer, because it's about 50% of the annual emissions for nitrous oxide, which is 300 times warming potential as carbon.
Oh, wow. Do we have solid information, Terry, about the percentage of greenhouse gas emissions that are created by the food sector? I mean, it seems like there's some debate about how much it really is.
The food system, so if you're including production and processing and, you know, distribution and marketing, is anywhere from 25 to 42%. That's what they say for their things. But agriculture of that is 71%. So a lot of it is in production.
How can regenerative agriculture capture more carbon in the soil? You started to talk about this. I'm going to start with you, Terry, then go to you, John.
Okay.
What, or would you like to start, John, about how it helps kind of trap that in there?
Well, one of the things that we do is plant cover crops. And I was waiting on rain to plant rye at my farm. And so if we keep a live plant with live roots in the soil all year long, those are going to be sequestering carbon out of the atmosphere, stabilizing the soil, putting it in, creating the mycorrhizal microorganisms, the fungus associates. And a lot of that is fixed through those processes. The residue protects, like when we're getting really bad storms now. And so with all of that and without the oxidation through plowing, we can build about maybe 0.1% organic matter a year. And, you know, it took a while for us to run it down, but we're bringing it back slowly. And you see it very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And how, I guess I might be getting too scientific, or this might be based on my lack of scientific knowledge, but how much carbon does it store? How deep does that really go, Terry? And I'm thinking about, you know, I was reading up on these no-till practices that we've been talking about, but once that land is tilled a few years down the road, doesn't that release carbon back into the atmosphere? Talk about kind of how all that works together.
The tilling and the carbon?
The tilling and the carbon and how much carbon you can store, all that good stuff.
The numbers do change on that as well, depending on who you look at, but I think I should have memorized all this stuff.
Oh, no.
Let's see. I'm just going to forget the numbers.
Okay.
So, John was mentioning how the carbon is put into the soil through photosynthesis, taken out atmospheric carbon, is put into plant tissues, exuded through the roots, feeds the microbes. So then they produce humic acid, which is the carbon. It's about 60% carbon. And then if it goes into the mineral soil, the minerals, because of the cation anion exchanges, they bond together, and that's where you get the carbon in the soil. Now, if it gets translocated deeper, so this is downward movement, either with water, animals, or those microbes, or roots. So this is where planting is good. So you need to go down over 11 inches. So that's like 30 centimeters. And perennial plants are the ones that have roots long enough, because crop plants are like 4 to 7 inches. And so they're not going to push the carbon down as much. And if you're tilling and you're holding it into that shallow soil, you're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
Did I answer your question?
I think so. Just because, again, I'm not a science person. I'm a journalism person. So the carbon, the deeper you go, the more the carbon is stored. If you go past that 11-inch mark,
because it's held in place. There's no water that's going to wash it away. There's no wind that's going to blow it away. It just starts going down and it sits there, and it's more resistant to that weathering and erosion. And so that's stable carbon. Labile carbon, this is where I'm going to get too scientific, is the carbon that decomposes really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be organic matter, leaf litter. It's gone really quickly. So that carbon is recycled through the carbon cycle, but the stable carbon is deeper.
And if you're tilling, does that then release carbon that
not
closer to the
surface? Yes.
Surface
and
carbon?
Tilling, if it's conservation tillage, it's 2 to 4 inches. That's very shallow. But deep tilling can even disturb the stable carbon if it's more than that 11 inches.
Yeah. John, what's your practice on your farm? You mentioned no tilling helps you have a life, so you're not always out there with the tractor and tilling. Do you have to till every so often, though, to make your farm work?
Actually, the longer you go without tilling, the more the soil self-organizes into the little microchambers that the little bacteria and the fungus and the microinvertebrates and all that like to live in. So, and rye roots go really deep. I've found them in tile lines 3 and 4 foot deep.
Oh, wow.
So they can really, cereal rye is very good about that. Most crops, though, only have maybe a foot deep of roots. The, I hate tilling. I did have one field get really rough, and I hired my neighbor to do shallow tilling on it, and I got a cover crop on it right away. But the longer it's in no-till, the better that the capillary action works to either bring up moisture if it's dry, like during this last dry period. Our crops did quite well because the deep soil moisture could come up and take care of the plants.
Mm-hmm. We did have a caller. She didn't stay on the line, but Mary asks, what is the main difference between organic permaculture and regenerative? Okay, Terry. Terry's ready for that one.
Yeah, so it's the numbers that mess me up, but
yeah.
Concept-wise, got it. So organic farming is still conventional farming, except for they use, instead of synthetic fertilizers and pesticides, they use organic ones. So they still feed the plant and not the soil. Regenerative agriculture, permaculture, those are all part of what's called agroecology, where you're farming like it's an ecosystem. It is part of nature. And so you're mimicking nature, you're following nature, you're observing nature, and you're giving nature what it needs to live and thrive, because soil is our greatest repository of life. You can have a tablespoon and you've got 10 billion bugs, you know, anything in there. But it's the engines of what makes terrestrial life go too. And so the agroecology keeps permaculture, which is a whole different holistic system. They have some of the shared practices, no-till, cover cropping. It just starts like regenerative agriculture kind of emphasizes the carbon farming, the climate smart farming to integrate livestock, whereas permaculture has all sorts of things. You can do hugelkultur and, you know, herb spirals, and they get a little more like, hey, we're going to contour the land. So it gets way holistic. But permaculture is cool.
Okay. Well, we will continue our conversation about regenerative farming practices after a short break. And later in the program, we'll hear about a new approach to addiction prevention. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about regenerative farming practices and what impact they could have on the climate crisis. My guests are University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor and Undergraduate Director for Environmental Studies, Terry Jacobs, and Brandstrater Farm, farmer and owner, John Brandstrater. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, John, how do farmers and scientists figure out whether those practices, these regenerative agriculture practices, are capturing more carbon or just maintaining the carbon that's already in the soil? How do you figure that out?
Well, there's measurements and metrics. There's a system, it's called GREET, and that's of greenhouse gases, regulated emissions, energy, and use in technology is the acronym for that. And so corn ethanol has a GREET number of 29.1. Sugarcane ethanol has one of 35. Regular petroleum gasoline is 50. So if you can get under that 50, you're doing well. So there's some companies that are helping farmers verify through third-party verifiers that you are meeting those goals. There are some farmers that actually are producing corn at a zero carbon, you know, output. They're neutral, and they're not burning carbon. There's some, but generally it's much higher than that. Mm-hmm. So it just depends on the practices and cover cropping and using compost or different things like that can help you lower your score. And then that makes, with the new tax incentives, that can make a higher payment for you on commodities.
Mm-hmm. Terry, how long could it take for these practices for regenerative agriculture to really significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, if it's done correctly, it can offset 100% of the greenhouse gases. But even if we went net zero today with emissions, we're still going to have 1,000 gigatons of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere today. And as I like to tell students, a gigaton is 200 million elephants. And so you can imagine how much 1,000 gigatons is. So what we need are not just stopping emissions, but drawing the excess carbon from the atmosphere into our plant life, into our soils. The soils are the greatest terrestrial sink where you can put and store carbon on the planet. And agriculture comprises 10% of our land. And so agriculture has a big input into storing our carbon. So I hope we do change. As to the time, that's probably, I don't know the answer to that one because we have to start implementing it before we're going to really, really know. Because it's a long game when you start storing carbon.
Yeah. So, what about, you know, there have been lots of claims about regenerative agriculture, how much it can do. We've talked about farming. Let's talk about cattle ranching, regenerative cattle ranching. I was reading up on that. Terry, do you have thoughts about what the pros and cons are for that? It sounds like kind of rotating the cattle around can be a big plus, but then you also need more land to do that. I mean, it sounds like quite a balancing act there.
It is, and every place is going to be different, and the intensity of grazing is going to be different, and what you're going to put down. So no place is unique, so we have to have different practices in place in different places. And did you use the NRC at the National Resource Conservation Service?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yes. So that's a service for farmers anywhere, and they can provide some of the technical assistance, some of the planning that they need. But regenerative agriculture has to happen because it's not just greenhouse gases. So he was mentioning all the soil structure and fertility and greater yields. It also has that great soil moisture retention. And the drought, that's why he was able to still have plants, was because of that water retention. And adding livestock, if they do that, like I said, puts the inputs right there. They rotate it around. Your cow is healthier because I know Green Acres Farm, they have regenerative agriculture. They like to call it generative agriculture. They've done their studies that cows that are pasture-raised in this process have better quality meat. It's better for the person.
John, do you have any livestock? Are you familiar with?
I have billions of earthworms, but you know, some land really lends itself well to pastures, and other land lends itself to, say, row crop agriculture. You know, the flatter soil. So, a well done grazing system where they allow the plants to get pretty big and then put a lot of livestock in a small area. They eat it down. That is one of the fastest ways to restore soil.
Mm, okay. And does it require a whole lot more land because of the way you're moving the cattle around?
Well, if you go with the model of a confinement system where you have a whole lot of animals on concrete, bringing the food to them and then dealing with the byproducts, I think it's much prettier and less smelly system.
Okay. Yeah, that's awful. I've been out to Wyoming where they have a lot of the industrial farms. It's horrid.
Yeah.
But if you go to a farm that's regenerative, you don't really smell anything.
Are there, you know, we were talking about how this is a long game with regenerative agriculture. Are there any other approaches that could work faster when it comes to agriculture or these other, you know, all the other things that are contributing to the climate crisis? I'm wondering, Terry, what do you think? Should we be paying lots of attention to other things, too, to try to speed up the progress on?
I think we should pay attention to everything that we have in hand. But a lot of research has been focusing on, and this is where I'm interested, too, is in biochar. It's a biological charcoal. And it has a great capacity to store carbon. We still see it thousands of years later in what's called Terra Preta. It's in the Maya civilization. They're way gone, but the soil is still very thick and black. So it's literally black soil. And they're researching biochar in croplands and as well as a feed amendment supplement for cows to reduce the methane emissions. And it's been shown to improve the health there, too. So it can be a soil conditioner as well as a carbon sequestration strategy.
John, what kinds of incentives are farmers getting to use these regenerative approaches? Is there anybody out there, government or organizations, kind of helping people, encouraging people, making it worth their money?
Oh, absolutely. And so there are payments for cover cropping. There has been free use or leasing of equipment for the specialized equipment. A lot of our equipment sits around 99% of the time, and we just need it a few days out of the year. So if we can share ownership, that's really good. In my case, I'm already doing all these practices, and they're mostly paying for new practices. And so there are systems like for the biofuels initiatives, where they tally up all your practices and then you can benefit from that. But if you're already doing everything, it's not much. Here in Ohio, we have about 3% of farmers using cover crops. In Indiana, maybe 10%. In the Chesapeake watershed, like 65%, because they have more incentives.
Wow. Do you find that your crops are more desirable for people when you explain to customers or people who are buying your crops kind of what you do, what the benefits are? Can you charge a little more?
Well, I part of my crop rotation is heritage wheats, which I mill and sell locally to bakers, and they definitely have an interest. They want a story, and so that's a good one right there. But the, you know, for commodities, not as much.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. Terry, I was reading that some big food corporations are encouraging farmers to use these practices, and some are even labeling products in a way that indicates, hey, we're behind these more sustainable practices. How can we as consumers know if that's legit? I mean, is there something to look for on products to really know when, you know, something good is happening behind the scenes in terms of the agriculture?
I understand the greenwashing that you're worried about. And it does happen sometimes. I heard stories from farmers where if you didn't see grass finished with grass fed, that possibly that cow was finished with Skittles that didn't have the S on it. Yes. Yeah, so I prefer if there's transparency. So if somebody has a website we can go to, we can visit the farm, we can see that their practices are good, because I know some egg companies got in trouble for saying they were this and then they went and looked and that's not what happened. So I do hope that we're not just proclaiming like we're going to do this, but we're showing that we're doing it. Like people can see webcams of people's cows on the farm feeding grass, or their chickens, or their pigs, or whatever they're raising with it in woodlands or agroforestry with, or even a picture of your farm. I know you said your website's great. So go to the website. We, you know, farmers did that and we knew who the farmers were, instead of like, these are just the practices. Mm-hmm. Like, who are the farmers? Let's celebrate them because they're the ones growing our food so we can survive.
Yeah.
But it is difficult to know. It puts all the onus on the consumer, which is unfair.
Yeah. And John, we're running short on time, but just in, you know, half a minute or so, what are resources if people really want to get started with these practices, even on a small scale? Are there resources you could recommend that people can look to figure out how to go about this?
There are local permaculture groups, and there Ohio No-Till Council is one for our more row crop size agriculture. And the local soil and water conservation districts are fantastic in that information.
Okay. Sound like great tips. I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor and Undergraduate Director for Environmental Studies, Terry Jacobs, and Brandstrater Farm farmer and owner, John Brandstrater. Thank you both so much for your time today. You've been terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Up next, we'll hear about a new approach to addiction prevention that aims to reduce overdose deaths in Kentucky. This is Cincinnati Edition.